Welcome to Walk in Truth. These are the Bible teachings of Pastor Michael Lentz, equipping you to reach out with God's truth to all people and how to apply that truth to today's issues, trends, and culture. Learn more when you visit walkintruth.com. Now here's part one of Pastor Michael's teaching in 2 Samuel chapter 15, verses 1 through 23, called Conspiracy and Betrayal.
Now, it came about after this, 2 Samuel 15:1. So whenever you see something like that, you say, after what? The last verse of chapter 14 says, so when Joab, and remember Joab had manipulated a way to get a woman to come before David and tell a story and ultimately get Absalom back into the royal court. When Joab came to the king, and this is after Absalom had started a fire in Joab's field to get things moving. You remember that? Hey, you're not returning my phone calls. I'll just set your field on fire and then we'll get things moving in a positive direction here. Well, they responded to the ultimatum of Absalom, called for him, 14:33. Thus he came to the king, prostrated himself, that looks good, on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. That's how last week ended. These were, you could say in many ways, formalities of the royal court. Sometimes you'll see in Europe and in other places how people will do a formal kiss on the cheek. They'll kiss both sides of the face. And it's not necessarily something that's done out of deep emotion or a depth of relationship. It's more a formality. David's kiss was a kiss from a father to a son, but it does seem like what Absalom did was a formality, bowing before the king, almost like you would do if you came before anybody where that was expected. And then David's kiss was a way of saying, you're back in the good graces of the royal court. You're an heir again, even though we know that Absalom will not be the heir to the throne. He will die. But Absalom was never intended to be the heir to the throne. The heir to the throne is going to be a man named Solomon. That was God's plan. And David is going to know as these chapters unfold, and I think we all are aware of what is behind this, that God's disciplinary hand is happening in David's life. He is meting out discipline to David for what David did. And David was told by Nathan the prophet, the sword's never going to leave your house. What you did in secret is going to be done openly. And you've given cause for the enemies of God to blaspheme. You might be asking some deeper theological questions like, well, if that's the case, if God's meting out discipline to David, does that mean that Absalom is just a pawn in this story? That God is the one moving the puzzle pieces? And the answer to that is no. God is eternal. He doesn't have to look down a corridor of time, nor does he really have to move puzzle pieces. He already knows everything because for God, everything is now. It's his nature. He's eternal. He is the beginning, he's the middle, and he's the end. Never in heaven does he say, whoa, I didn't see that one coming. And aren't you glad? Now, that doesn't mean that God doesn't work out his will, and some of these things are a bit of a mystery when you begin to kind of dig down, but we are told in 2 Samuel 15:1, it came about after this, that Absalom provided for himself a chariot, so he's now back in the royal court, a chariot and horses, and 50 men as runners before him. Now, all of a sudden, Absalom provides for himself a chariot. He, all of a sudden, wants to look kingly. And as the chapter unfolds, we're going to see that he begins to plot a plan to usurp the throne from his father. He wants to be the king, probably partly because he doesn't believe that his father is just. After all, he let Amnon get away with what he got away with. Why does he deserve to be king? And somewhere deep down, Absalom was nursing bitterness. Turn over, hold your place in 2 Samuel. Turn over to the book of Hebrews. This is chapter 12, Hebrews chapter 12. The writer of Hebrews is giving examples in chapter 11 about faith, and then he gives a negative example from the life of Esau. Hebrews 12, look at verse 14. Hebrews 12. He's just been talking about discipline and how if God disciplines you and you learn from it, then it will yield fruit in your life. If you submit to that discipline, if you will, it's not pleasant. Nobody likes it. But it will allow you, Hebrews 12:10, to share in God's holiness if you allow that discipline to work. All discipline, Hebrews 12:11, for the moment seems to be not to be joyful, but sorrowful. If you've ever heard your parents say to you, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you, I'm not sure about that one. But anyway, but I used it on my kids. So anyway, feel free. But but it yields something. It yields, if you're trained by discipline, notice middle of 11 of Hebrews 12. Yet to those who have been trained by it afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of what? Of righteousness. Therefore, strengthen the hands that are weak, the knees that are feeble. Discipline is intended to strengthen weaker parts of your life. Make straight paths for your feet so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Discipline's purpose is for healing and strength. Pursue peace with all men and the sanctification without which no one will see the Lord. And see to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many be defiled. Now, I mentioned at the beginning, if you go back to 2 Samuel, that Absalom was nursing a root of bitterness, and by it, many were going to be hurt. What should he have done? Let's ask that question. Well, I think if he would have come to his father and said, Dad, I am angry. I don't know why you didn't deal with Amnon. I am sorry for what I've done. I regret it. Would you please forgive me? We probably would have been on the road to healing. But instead of that, Absalom nursed the bitterness. He didn't show it on the outside, but on the inside, the water was boiling over. And so he begins to position himself. He gets a chariot, horses and a chariot, chariots, and he begins to show that he is kingly. He's bowed before his father, but I think it's clear that his heart is far away from his father. Jesus said, you hypocrites, rightly did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Absalom's heart was far from his father. Absalom's ambition was singular. He would oppose the kingdom of David, but by opposing David's kingdom, he would oppose God. And if you oppose God, you're going to lose. David's ascension to the throne was not solely dependent upon his person. Yes, he was a man after God's own heart, but he was still a sinner like you and me. The Davidic covenant promises that God made were not based upon perfect performance. It was something that God decided to do. He chose David. And so Absalom, by opposing his father, will oppose God. David's failure had weakened his kingdom. God's heavy hand was on him, but still God's promises were there. And God's promises never fail. He will never leave you, nor will he ever forsake you. Even if you feel like you've made some poor decisions that have hurt you and others around you, and even your witness. And so Absalom began to put some stuff in place. The sons rode upon mules, 2 Samuel 13:19, but Absalom set up chariots and horses. Some commentators say this is the first time chariots and horses are seen on the streets of Jerusalem in the Bible. And they say that chariots and horses are associated more with the enemies of God, think of the chariots of Egypt, than they are with God's people. And chariots and horses and the multiplication thereof were a warning given to the kings of Israel not to multiply horses and to multiply wives. But it seemed like they ignored those warnings. And so Absalom is trying to look the part. He's trying to get a big image going on. And so he got a tricked out SUV, tinted windows, lowered, cool rims, guys with sunglasses, young and studly, running in front of the
Hey, you got Absalom? You got his back? Yeah, good, 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 good.
Everywhere he went, he looked like the official kingly crown prince. Whoa, there he goes again. There he goes again. He had one of the most well-known cars of the time. It was called a JMW. Jerusalem Motor Works. I don't know. How do you like that? Anyway. And he was going around town looking like he had Secret Service, and everywhere he went, there was parade and pomp. You think David heard about it? You think any of the people in the city went, hey, David, have you seen Absalom's new car? Have you seen some of the guys that run with him? Have you heard about their walkie-talkie system? I mean, David had to be hearing.
You'll hear more from Pastor Michael in a moment.
Did you miss part of today's message? You can always listen again on demand. Catch every teaching from Pastor Michael Lance on the Walk in Truth app or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's an easy way to keep growing in God's Word and stay grounded in biblical truth throughout your week. Just search for Walk in Truth and start listening anytime.
Your financial support helps keep Walk in Truth on the radio, and it also helps us reach people all over the world through the podcast. That means someone driving home from work, someone on a morning walk, or even someone on the other side of the globe can hear the hope of Jesus right when they need it most. And here's the cool part, every gift helps. Even a small step like becoming a monthly partner for just $5 a month makes a big impact. Think about it, for the price of less than one coffee, you could help keep Bible teaching going out day after day. So would you join us? Head over to walkintruth.com. That's walkintruth.com and become a partner today. And thank you.
We'd love to hear from you. If today's teaching on Walk in Truth encouraged you, challenged you, or raised a question, reach out and let us know. Send your comments, reactions, or questions to contact@walkintruth.com or give us a call at 844-48-TRUTH. Your story and feedback matter, and they help us continue equipping believers to apply God's truth to their daily walk. That's contact@walkintruth.com or 844-48-TRUTH. We look forward to hearing from you.
We'd love to see who's listening, so please connect with us on Facebook or Instagram. Just do a search for Walk in Truth Show. Now, back to Pastor Michael Lance right here on Walk in Truth.
Have you heard about their walkie-talkie system? I mean, David had to be hearing. But you're going to notice an underlying theme in the chapter. David, we never hear from him. He's passive. Passive parenting doesn't work. Can I get a witness? Sometimes you see the brat in the store and you say, please, I'll cover the camera. You spank him. That's all I'll say about that right now. Absalom used to rise early, verse 2, and stand beside the way to the gate. The gate was the city hall of the ancient world where what's called adjudication would happen. They would hear cases and come to conclusions of judgment and trials and that kind of thing. So Absalom woke up early. He believed in the early saying, the early bird gets the crown. He would stand by the way of the gate. And it happened when any man had a suit to come to the king for judgment because the king would hear cases. Absalom would call to him. He had his chariots and horses and 50 men. He looked official. And he would say, from what city are you? And he would say, your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel. Hey, he kind of intercepted people who are supposed to be coming to King David to hear his wisdom. And he stood a little bit before the gate and he would say, hey, where are you from, brother, sister? Oh, I'm from the tribe of Dan. Oh, you are. I have a cousin out in those parts. Yeah. You ever experienced this and that from over there and there? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, you know, yeah. Yeah, I know that place. And he would all of a sudden begin to position himself so he could be the judge. After all, he didn't think his father's judgment was that great anyway. Where are you from? Hey, let's talk a little bit. The city gate being the official city hall, you can check Genesis 19:1, where Lot is at the city gate. You can check out Deuteronomy 21:19, Ruth 4:1, but just think of the city gate as kind of city hall. And so here's Absalom intercepting. He has initiative. He wakes up early. He intercepts. He ingratiates himself with the people. Absalom would say to him, the person that he struck up the conversation, "See, your claims are good and right, but no man listens to you on the part of the king." If you have an ESV, it says, "There is no man designated by the king to hear you." Here's the problem, brother. I hear what you're saying. I think your claims are good and right. I agree with you. If only King David would get his administration together, people like you could be heard. People like you would get recourse for their cases, against others. But this administration is slack. They don't care about the people anymore. Do you see a budding politician? Oh, yeah. Sure, he had posters with his face on it. "Make Israel great again." Stuff like that. And what he was really implying is the king doesn't listen to you. They don't listen to you anymore. They don't care about the people. Your chances of receiving justice from this administration are slim to none, brother. But I hear you. I'm the crown prince after all, and I hear what you're saying. And he began to create a dilemma. He was making political promises, and he was also speaking against his father's administration. And Absalom would then say something like this, verse 4, "Oh, that one would appoint me judge in the land, then every man who has any suit or cause could come to me, and I," can you hear it, brothers and sisters, "I would give the people justice." Political promises, right? We've heard it from every politician from the time there was any kind of democratic process. "I will be a friend of the people. I will do this. Read my lips." This is back a couple of generations ago. "Read my lips. No new taxes." Yeah, right. But this is how the game works. And Absalom began to play the game. And he began to put doubt in people's hearts about David and make them look at him. And after all, Absalom was a good-looking dude. He had an impressive entourage. There was no one as handsome as him. And remember, most people's hairdos had some of Absalom's hair. If you were with us last week, he had some big hair, man. He had opened several stores. He had a chain going on. J. Vernon McGee called Absalom a great backslapper. "I'll take care of you, man." Backslapper. And so he began to tell people, "Look, if I was in charge around here, people would be getting justice. I'll set things right." And it happened that when a man came near prostrate himself before him, by the way, which shouldn't have happened because he wasn't the king, but a man would come and prostrate himself. Notice how quick on the trigger Absalom was. Earlier we saw he would tell the person they're right before he even apparently heard the case. And then when a person came before Absalom, he would put out his hand, he would take hold of him, and he would kiss him. "Where are you from, man? Oh, yeah, it's going to be okay." And he was, his father just kissed him at the end of the last chapter. He was giving kingly kisses, but his kisses were full of malice, almost like the hypocritical kiss of Judas when he kissed Jesus in the garden to identify him as the one. And in this manner, Absalom, verse 6, dealt with all Israel who came to the king for judgment. And so verse 6 says, Absalom stole away the hearts of the men of Israel. Little by little, one at a time, he would hear a case. He would say, I will give justice in your favor. He would kiss them. He would say he had a connection to them. He understood them. They would walk away saying, man, he's handsome. He's impressive. He listens to the people. And he gives judgments in our favor. What else could you want? And so he stole their hearts away. There are some scholars that believe that David may have been sick, physically ill at this time. There are some psalms that are attributed to this time that speak of some sort of sickness. Thus it may be, and this is conjecture, but this is one view, that Absalom kicked David when he was down and stepped into an open gap to seize advantage when his father was physically ill and maybe couldn't carry out all the duties of the office. I mean, that's one explanation, and it seems to make some sense. Here's one of the psalms you can look at, Psalm 41. Just go to your right, Psalm 41. Many of the psalms are written by David, and of course, a lot of them are written during times of trouble. That's what makes them so relatable. And you might be asking, well, what was David's weapon if he was on a sick bed and Absalom's pulling all these shenanigans? What did David do, and what should I do if something similar is happening to me?
You've been listening to Conspiracy and Betrayal, Part 1 on Walk in Truth. That was Pastor Michael's teaching in 2 Samuel chapter 15, verses 1 through 23. If you missed any part of today's program, you can listen to Walk in Truth on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please share Walk in Truth with a friend if today's message encouraged you. Now here's Pastor Michael with a final word.
As we think about the topic of Absalom's betrayal of David, maybe you are going through something right now where you've been let down by somebody that you trusted. Somebody in your inner circle, somebody close to you, maybe even someone who is family or church family. And you might be saying, okay, how do I respond to that kind of betrayal in a way that honors God instead of me becoming bitter, disillusioned? You know, sometimes when this happens, people want to give up on the church as a whole. They want to, you know, maybe give up on people. And, you know, that's part of the cost, I would say, to love well is you put your heart out there. And when you do, sometimes your heart can be stepped on. It can feel like you're being trampled on. And David certainly knew what that was like. And I want you to think about the greater David here. Jesus knows what it's like. Think about Judas and Peter. You know, Judas betraying him, Peter denying him, everybody fleeing from him. You know, everybody who said they would be at his side no matter what might come, gone. The end of Paul's life, he says, there's no one left with me except Luke. You know, the Apostle Paul, man, one of the greatest Christians and evangelists that ever lived. And he looks around and everybody's bailed. So if you've got a handful of people who are faithful to you, count yourself blessed. It doesn't make it all right, my brother, my sister. It doesn't make it all right if someone did you wrong. But what you can know is that you're not alone. And your great high priest understands. In fact, he empathizes and sympathizes with you. I don't want to ever forget that when I pray, Jesus knows. And I can find comfort in the fact that he knows exactly how I feel and what I'm going through. It's Pastor Michael Lance, and we're nearing the end of the week as we have moved through 2 Samuel 14 and 15. One of the tools that you can take advantage of right here from Walk in Truth is the free Walk in Truth app. It's available on your app store for free. Download it. It's a blue pillar. There you can listen to messages on demand. If sometimes, I know some of you drive to work and you didn't catch the end of the message, well, you can go back to the Walk in Truth app. You can listen to the rest. You can send the message to friends, share it. You can find out more about the ministry and keep up with what's going on right here on Walk in Truth. So we'll see you right here tomorrow.
Remember, Walk in Truth is a listener-supported ministry. Your financial partnership helps us broadcast on this station and provide the podcast for free. Also, more people like you can dive deeper into the Word of God and apply it to their life. Please consider becoming a Walk in Truth monthly partner of at least $5 a month, or give a one-time gift. Please visit walkintruth.com to give. And join us tomorrow for part two of Conspiracy and Betrayal.
But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom is king in Hebron. All right, guys, here's the plan. I told Dad I got to pay a vow, and that's why I'm going to Hebron. And as soon as I arrive and you hear the trumpet blow, begin to announce me as king. Look, this is what he's been working towards for 4 years.
I'm Mike Massaro. Thanks for listening to Walk in Truth, where it's our goal to equip you to reach out with God's truth to all people.